part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part.
Fanboy.com. So, shall we just begin the interview?
Sure. No, yeah, whatever works best. Cool. I'm happy to chit chat for a little bit. I'm happy to dive right in. I'm excited to do this. I think this will be a lot of fun, and yeah. Thank you for doing this.
Absolutely. I mean, thank you for joining me. Let's just start off by saying my name is Christian Horn, and this is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. I have a very special guest on the line. His name is Josh. Josh, you're going to have to help me with your last name because I'm terrible at pronouncing last names. So,
well, it's as am I, and it's a great last name because I can always weed out the telemarketers. my last name is pronounced Isaric.
Isaric. Okay.
Isaric. It's some made up. I don't know. I don't even know what it is.
Josh Isaric. No, that's great. I would have come close if I had tried. I just did not want to embarrass myself. Josh Isaric. No, and you're probably going to have to remind me of that at the end of this because I will forget. No, but you are here because you have a very awesome comic, which I have read. It is called The Very Final Last Girls. And it just dropped today, right? From Darby Pop.
It was supposed to have dropped today.
Okay.
But, you know, there's a global economic meltdown happening. So there's a delay at the printer, which was unforeseen and unfortunately unavoidable.
Gotcha.
My publisher, Darby Pop, they assure me that we will be out in July at some point.
Okay.
So not too bad, but all it means is that, you know, they haven't officially listed it on their darbypop.com website yet, but it will be, hopefully by the end of July.
Oh.
That said, I believe the first four issues are already up at Comixology.
Oh, okay.
And you can read the first issue for free at darbypop.com. Now let me just be clear, it's a 6-issue miniseries that we're releasing just as one graphic novel.
Yeah. I was a little confused when I was reading the preview stuff. I was like, wait, did this come out in single issues first, or is it just one giant graphic novel? But it is on their site. I mean, I went to check Darby Pop's site because I'd never really kind of heard of that publisher. Sorry, Darby Pop.
Sure.
So I checked and it's listed on their site. So that's good.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Except just not to order yet. But
oh,
soon.
Okay. Gotcha. So, well,
no, Darby.
Oh, no.
Sorry,
go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just, so Darby Pop is Jeff Klein's, it's his publishing company. Jeff is a very, very storied animation producer who I've now had the privilege to work with twice.
Nice.
And we can get into that a little bit later if you want. But I love Jeff. I mean, you know, he's done G.I. Joe. He's done Transformers, a lot of animated series, and he publishes comics, which is awesome because he doesn't really need to.
Oh, interesting.
And I think it's cool.
Nice. No, I mean, checking out their website, their stuff looked really cool, and your book is great, right up my alley, because I love horror movies and stuff like that. Again, it's called The Very Final Last Girls, which is great because I know that there is a movie called The Final Girls, but this is different. This is The Very Final Last Girls.
Yes, and then there's a movie called The Final Girl, singular.
Which is different. That's very different.
We went through a lot of, we cycled through a lot of potential titles before landing on The Very Final Last Girls.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's cool. No, I mean, I love the title. I very much have enjoyed the book. I'm a big horror fan. We do horror movies like every October here on Part-Time Fanboy. We like to talk about horror movies. Like once a week we kind of like do our picks or I invite guests on and we'll talk about horror movies like for 4 or 5 weeks, depending on how many weeks there are in October. So this was right up my alley. It did trick me though, because it was interesting. I got the preview email and stuff. And at first I was like, oh, is this like a zombie thing? Because I love zombie things. But then there was a part of me too, where I was like, oh, it's another zombie thing. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like, how many zombie things can there be? But as I went on to read it, I was like, oh, it is kind of a thing. And I don't know how much I can speak to without kind of spoiling like the concept of everything. So
you can, I mean, the concept's pretty straightforward. You can.
Well, you go ahead. You're the creator. You're sure. You do the pitch.
Thanks. Well, it's, I came up with the idea, way back in like 2012 or whatever it was, after watching maybe my favorite movie of the last 15 years, which was The Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, okay. All right.
I assume you've seen it.
I have seen it. Yes, yeah. I
love it. And I, you know, full disclosure, I was not actually a horror guy.
Oh, really? Interesting.
It was a genre that, growing up, and I'll date myself, but growing up in like, you know, I was a little kid in the 80s.
Yep.
And like Freddy Krueger and, you know, Jason Voorhees and Mike Myers, like those guys were everywhere.
Yeah.
In the way that, you know, Iron Man and Black Panther and Spider-Man are today.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like I remember being in like first grade and like kids would dress up for Halloween with like store-bought Freddy Krueger costumes.
Yeah.
Which is a little weird.
Yeah.
About it. It's like child killer Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
But no, those guys terrified me. And I never actually saw their movies. I remember being at like sleepovers with friends and like hiding when like they would put on Nightmare. I mean, look, Inner Space terrified me.
I got a story for you. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Oh no, it's Poltergeist. I had to be dragged kicking and screaming out of the theater. My uncle was like, what the fuck? Yeah, nice. I've told it before on this podcast. Poltergeist is a movie that I literally had to be dragged. Like once the shit started going down in the house. Yeah.
Sure.
Anyway, but go on.
I mean, that was me. Like I couldn't even make it through Inner Space. so I never watched them. And then probably right around in college, this is when Buffy was in like its later seasons. I had friends who were super into Buffy and they were like, and I was like, I don't want to watch that. It looks dumb. I don't care. Vampires, blah, blah, blah. My friends are like, Josh, you like comic books, right? I'm like, yeah, I love comics. They're like, this is just Spider-Man with a girl fighting monsters.
Nailed it.
And I was like, oh, I would love that. And I loved it. And I became a huge Joss Whedon fan.
Yeah.
And, you know,
how are we doing with that Joss Whedon love these days?
Separate the art and the artist, I suppose.
I guess so. Anyway, go on.
Look, I never met the guy. Worked with him. I can enjoy his material, his writing, even if he's, you know, by all accounts, not a very nice person. But again, I don't know. I don't want to speak ill.
Absolutely. Sorry to put you, stick you in a corner.
I'm a fan of the man's writing. I mean, I loved his run on the X-Men. I was an intern at Marvel, I think, while was happening. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Marvel Comics, not studio. That wasn't really a thing.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Yet. I mean, this is dating me. I was a big fan of his writing. And Cabin in the Woods came out. And, you know, Drew Goddard came up in the Whedon camp on Angel. I think it was Angel.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, I don't really want to watch this, but it's supposed to be cool and all my friends are going, so I'll go. And the movie just like blew my mind.
Yeah.
And it just like opened me up to the genre that I never really considered before. And I was like, I kind of love this.
Mm-hmm.
I went back and, you know, I also teach, I'm a screenwriter and I teach screenwriting, and I was teaching a genre class, and in teaching genre, like I had to watch horror and I had to watch Nightmare on Elm Street. And I said to my boss, I'm like, this isn't going to be too scary. He's like, no, you're going to really love it. And I did.
How old were you at that point? You're teaching screenwriting and you're asking if it was scary.
I'm in my 30s at that point.
Oh, really? And you were asking how scary it was?
Yeah, but I loved it. And like my wife didn't watch it with me. Although we later then went over a friend's house to watch what I think is the best of those movies, Dream Warriors.
Okay.
Which, I mean, that the influence of that is like all over my book.
Yeah.
I got super into it. And after watching Cabin in the Woods, I was like, wait, there's this cool trope about final girls. Like, that's a thing. I've never heard of this.
Yeah.
I did a little research and I was like, well, what if all this stuff was real? And what if there was like a government program to, you know, rehabilitate these final girls? They've experienced like horrible, horrible trauma. And then what happens if somebody starts picking off those final girls one by one? Now, look, I mean, I came up with this idea, you know, over 10 years ago and or maybe around 10 years ago, whenever that movie came out. And there have been other final girl stories. And I'm not claiming that, you know, I was the first or but I also don't want to disrespect any of the other really, really great writers who have also written in this space. Sure. But I think, you know, what really sparked my imagination, again, being a big comic book fan, was, well, if you're going to survive a horror movie, you're probably going to come out with a little extra. And by that, I mean, if you survive Nightmare on Elm Street, like, you might got some Professor X stuff going on afterwards.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you survive a zombie movie, and you're right, it's supposed to be a fake out a little bit. The opening sequence of the book, my idea was, well, what if we open the story in the last 5 minutes of any zombie movie?
Sure.
And that's intentional. And I actually, and that actually worried me. And, you know, look, I love The Walking Dead, but I also didn't want to be like competing in that space because there's so many awesome zombie stories and I don't really know what I would say that differently in that space. So it's like starting there. It's like, it's not a zombie book, but you're going to see some zombies for a few pages.
No, I mean, I actually, who is the artist on this?
Sure. So there's four artists I want to highlight. The first is a longtime collaborator of mine. Z Crockett. Z and I met at Mizzou, University of Missouri, about 15 years ago now. I was there for grad school. She was finishing up her undergrad or had just graduated, and we were doing cartoons together in the student paper. I wrote her a fan letter. I was like, I love your stuff. You don't know me. Let's get coffee. And we've been working together ever since.
Oh, that's great.
So she did the first four chapters and then she had to bow out. And I want to make sure I get his name right. And please, Andreas Barrero,
gotcha.
Is the, hopped in to do, let me make sure I get that.
Five and six.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, Andreas Barrero. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. We've never actually spoken. Our whole correspondence has been over email.
Oh, wow.
But he has been a absolute delight and joy to work with. He stepped in to do the last two and finish the book. And then I'm going to butcher her name, but Sia Ohm, I hope I'm getting that right, did our trade cover. She's fantastic. And then I also really want to highlight Michael Woods, the colorist.
Yeah.
Without whom this book wouldn't exist.
Oh, interesting.
And Ian Brown, who did our logos. So that was really the artistic team. You know, but Z and I were working on this for years together, kind of in a vacuum. And then when Darby Pop came in, it became apparent that Z was not going to be able to complete the book. So Andres stepped in, and here we are.
Yeah, no, well, everything looks, I was just going to say the opening pages by Z are what kind of sucked me in. And Andres did a great job on the last two chapters, but the zombie, it's kind of like a little bit, her style reminds me a little bit of Philip Bond, if you know who that is. It's sort of like a very, I don't want to say, I always say cartoony, but it's not cartoony. I mean, it's, you know, people take that as a not as a compliment, but I actually very much.
Oh, sure. I know. I just looked at Philip Bond.
Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of Philip Bond's work. Like, it's kind of what sucked me in. I did see it and I was like, oh, okay, this is zombies, but it ends up not being zombies. And basically, like you said, it's sort of like, it's at the tail end of a zombie movie and somebody gets rescued, right. Which depending on which zombie movie you're watching, people either do or don't survive.
Correct.
And she is kind of the last survivor of the sort of zombie apocalypse, her and her sister. But what you end up finding out is that they're, like you said, all these things, serial killers, slasher killers, warlocks, demons, blah, blah, blah. All this stuff is very real. And yes, the government is recruiting the final girls from all of these quote unquote sort of real movies to, right, to actually, I don't know exactly what, because
So the lead character, her name is Megan Williams. Yeah. She's the survivor of a zombie apocalypse, a zombie breakup.
Yeah.
Dawn of the Dead, Evil Dead, 28 Days
Anything
Later,
dead.
Take your pick. So she's recruited, So she is basically assigned the rehabilitation division.
Yeah.
And the book sort of gets into this at the end. But in my mind, there's like levels of like survival, right? If you just survive and you're a final girl, chances are you're going to need a lot of like therapy and a lot of trauma work. So that's really where Megan is taken. She's seen some stuff she wasn't supposed to see. She's taken to this facility with, you know, these kids from all over the country that frankly, she doesn't really want anything to do with.
Yeah.
What's driving her is she doesn't know what happens to her sister. And I don't want to get into that so much, but
sure,
because that just gets into the other levels of what I think the government might do to try to cover up this stuff. It's all answered in the book, but it does get into the final chapters.
Yeah, yeah, but that is essentially kind of like what drives her, is that her and her sister survived, and mm-hmm, this sort of like creepy government agency comes in and rescues her, but at the same time is like, you're staying with us, right? Like, you're not going anywhere. And she doesn't know why, and she wants to find her sister.
Well, I think she doesn't like the reason why.
Yeah.
I think they're very transparent. It's, you know, hey, you just saw a bunch of zombies. People aren't supposed to know that exists. We're going to take care of you. We're going to make sure you're okay. And then when you're ready, you can go back into society.
Sure, sure. But like anybody who's ever been sort of like taken in any movie or anything like that, she's suspicious of their motive.
Correct.
Right? And actually, and, yeah, not cool with yeah, being held like yeah, anyone
and,
would.
And I think that also has to do a lot with like her background as a character. She grew up off the grid, like a survivalist mm-hmm, in Colorado, which in my mind, like if you're going to survive a zombie movie, like you probably have to have these survival skills.
Yeah.
Which she does. And they become very, in my mind, that's her superpower.
Yeah.
In a book without official superpowers.
Yeah.
But she's very much a survivalist. She's very much a loner, very close with her family, who are either dead or missing when we pick up the story. But that is, yes, it is the emotional relationship with her sister that drives her and wants answers beyond, hey, you're here for your rehabilitation.
Yeah. 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 No, I thought it was it's a very sort of clever story. Like, again, I thought it was going to be one thing. It kind of turned into something else. And then as it went on, it even turned into something else again. And it was a lot of like really neat, like little twists that I wasn't expecting.
Thank you.
Very well done. I mean, I very much enjoyed it. Can you speak to some of the other sort of like final girls that she meets? Actually, they're not all final girls. There is one male, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's, I think it's, there's four final girls and one final boy. So Megan is the survivor of a zombie movie. Dina. And I also want to sort of highlight that not everything is what they seem. When you're dealing with teenagers, there's a lot of unreliable narrators. In fact, that like I had some backstory on some of the other characters that I just had to cut because, you know, six issues, you have time, but you don't have that much time to get into like, well, you know, here's the fifth most important of these final girl characters. You get three pages. That's it.
Sure,
you
know? Sure.
Whereas I had a lot more and some reveals coming. And then it's like, I just had to cut it because what's most important is Megan's emotional journey. Like you always got to go with the protagonist.
Yeah.
So there's Dina, who survived a summer camp slasher. She's at least Megan sees her as some spoiled rich kid from Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
So they do not get along at all. There's Heather, who survived a, what do we call them? A psychic warlock who, you know, invades people's dreams.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you can kind of connect the dots and see who that's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And then who else? There's Shauna, who there was like this, he was like a puzzle master.
Yeah.
With kind of a religious bent to it, very, you know, strict morals. Hopefully fans of the podcast know the movies I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They rhyme with Raw. So Shauna survived the puzzle master. And then the boy is Connor, who survived Pod People.
Yeah, that's great.
One of my favorite movies. Look, I adore Invasion of the Body Snatchers. It's one of my favorites. So growing up, one of my seminal films, and it's not really remembered as well as it should be, really? Is The Faculty. I love The Faculty.
Oh, I don't think I've ever seen The Faculty, but which of your, besides The Faculty, which one is your favorite? Which version of Snatchers?
Oh, the original.
The original? The original. Okay.
The original. Okay. I go the original, then the Donald, the Donald Sutherland one.
And what about the 90s version? You've seen that one, right?
Yeah, it was good.
It was good. There's just one particular scene that I always share on social media. Is it Jennifer Tilly? It's Jennifer Tilly, right? And she comes down. And
I think
like,
so.
Whenever one of my friends is like, I'm getting off of social media. It's just like literally right. I post that YouTube clip of like where she's like, where awesome. Are you going to go? There's nowhere to go. Where are you going to go? Like, I just love that scene. That's just the awesome. Whole movie could be tossed out, but that scene is fantastic.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I go to the original because, you know, it was, you know, such a great metaphor for like the Red Scare, McCarthyism. Like it was just such a, and like, it's, I would say it's science fiction, but like it borders on horror, which to me is always like super cool. But like, if you've never seen The Faculty, it's an absolute delight.
Okay.
You get to watch John Stewart have a very, violent death.
Okay.
And I say that as a big fan of John Stewart's,
sure,
his comedy. And it's just fun to see him play like a high school science teacher. Like the cast is great. It's like a lot of like 90s teen actors. Elijah Wood is the boy. He's the final boy. And his characters, and you know, it's a lot of, you know, references. So his character's name is Casey Connor. So I stole the name Connor from that. And he's kind of useless, which I love. So, you know, Connor, the one boy in, you know, the four girls is kind of useless, the comedic support, so to speak.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. But it's funny because when you sort of get to, cause the way that they address these things, you know, there's like little stories that they tell, right? Like what happened to me, and it's great because it's that little bit of exposition, but then there's like a flashback. And with Connor, again, Invasion of the Body Snatchers is one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. I can never decide which version I like the best, the 70s or the original, just because the 70s is so like, kind of like really dour and depressing. Like,
yeah,
really,
it's terrifying.
Yeah, yeah. It's like really, and I saw it when I was very young the first time, maybe on television, and that ending just freaks me the fuck. Like I just remember being like, oh wait, this is completely different than the original. Like wait, what just happened? So for me, but there was a little bit of like in that sequence, it reminded me a little bit of Invaders from Mars as well. Have you ever seen that movie?
Sure. I actually have not. And if it did, I will credit Z for that.
Yeah, no, it's it just reminded me a little bit of that. There was like a tint. So I was like, oh, is this supposed to be Body Snatchers or Invaders from Mars? And they did a remake, I think. Well, the original, I can't remember, but there was a remake that wasn't very good, I think, of Invaders from Mars. But yeah, it just reminded me a little bit of that. Yeah, yeah.
I'll watch that.
Well, you probably study. I mean, you're a screenwriter, so you would study it. But I don't know that I would recommend it to you. You probably watch it and be like, "What's this guy
you
Christian
know,
thinking
like,
about?"
I have a lot of like my boss gives me a lot of. Am I allowed to curse on this?
Sure, I just did a little while ago.
My boss gives me a lot of shit for some of my, I would say, unpopular opinions about movies and television.
Oh, really?
I like unabashedly. So I'll just, there are some beloved movies I can't stand and some movies that people hate, but I'm like, I kind of like that movie.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, like my wife and I won't, you know, I don't want to speak ill of other creatives, but my wife and I like to watch bad rom-coms.
Okay. You and my daughter, like, my 15-year-old daughter.
Nice.
Yeah.
The worse, the better. And there have been some delightful ones, delightfully bad.
Oh yeah. Just check out Netflix. You know,
without saying it. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's practically, I mean, Netflix has lifetime movies. Genre.
Oh, but they're so, like, some of them are so awful, they just become sublime.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. I won't make you say which one is your favorite of those, because obviously we'd be trashing somebody's work, which I've done on this podcast, right. But I know. Okay. We want to be nice. We want to be nice.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, so as a fan of, like, so, well, I mean, you weren't originally a fan of horror. Like, how many movies did you have to watch to, like, be able to break this down? I mean, you said it's been in sort of development for like 10 years, but when you originally came up with the idea, and I guess you saw Cabin in the Woods, were you like, oh crap, now I gotta go watch all these horror movies?
Not really. Because a lot of them you kind of just get through osmosis, and like, I don't think you need to watch every single Friday the 13th movie to get what a Friday the 13th movie is.
Sure.
Like, I remember very specifically being at a friend's house and watching the first two Halloweens for the first time.
Yeah.
And that first one is just, it's a straight up masterpiece.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's awesome. And I know that I wasn't gonna, you know, shit on somebody else's work, but that second Halloween, woof.
Okay, somebody explain this to me, because I like Halloween too. And what was wrong with it in your opinion? I mean, I remember seeing it the first time and thinking it was fine.
Yeah.
I haven't revisited it in a long time, but over the years I've seen it a couple of times. But what is it that is, you know, because a lot of people kind of trash that movie, and I'm like, what is it?
The first one is so cool and atmospheric, and, you know, it was... I don't want to get my film history wrong, and I know people will come at me for this, but it was probably the first slasher, if not among the first.
Yeah.
So, like, it wasn't really following an established template yet. It was just like a really cool character piece. Here's where my friends and I disagree. I hate the ending of the first Halloween. Absolutely.
Really?
Hate it.
Controversial. You're not kidding. That is a controversial opinion.
Because to me, what's so scary about Michael Myers is he's just a dude. But as soon as he becomes like a supernatural boogeyman with like superpowers, again, I actually really liked Halloween Kills.
Uh-huh.
Except for the ending when he just, like, spoiler alert for a movie that came out like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
He gets shot and then he just gets up and walks away and you're like, what?
Yeah.
And I thought the first David Gordon, it's David Gordon Green, I think, the first David Gordon Green Halloween was really cool.
Uh-huh.
The kind of like loose reboot sequel that they did a few in 2017, I thought that was great. But no, Halloween 2, it's so schlocky, and it's like all of the tropes that Cabin in the Wood just like totally takes to town. It's like, it's all in that movie.
Yeah.
It's silly.
It's so funny because, I mean, everyone's opinion is everyone's opinion. And I'm sure people will be like, Christian likes Halloween too. Like, I was, and when they did the reboots, that was one of the things that I was kind of bugged by. I was like, but wait, Jamie Lee Curtis was in Halloween too. Why can't we, like, why do we have to just throw the, I mean, look, these aren't like high art, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know,
I would say the first one is, argue the first one is.
Do you really think, I mean, I guess,
I do.
Maybe.
I think it's a masterpiece. I think, I mean, just like the score, it's a great film.
Yeah. I mean, it's up there, I would say, but I don't know that I would, I guess I would have to rethink about it. Like, masterpiece. I don't know. For me, like stuff like something like The Exorcist is like a masterpiece.
Sure.
Like 28
The Exorcist,
Days Later.
The Shining. 28 Days Later. I mean, those are untouchable. But I would throw the first Halloween up there.
Okay.
You know, and depending on how charitable I'm feeling, I might also throw, maybe it's not my favorite, but I might throw that first Nightmare on Elm Street up there. And maybe Scream. Maybe.
Okay. Yeah. The first.
Oh, and of course, It Follows. It Follows is so
good. Oh, I read that's the sort of like retro. Yeah. I mean, I saw that a couple.
It's the art house one. It's so good.
Do you? I liked it, but I didn't love it as much as everyone else seemed to. Like, just.
So I was. I mean, this is my film nerd coming out. I was a big fan of his first film. If you get a chance to watch it, it's called The Myth of the American Sleepover.
Okay. I don't think I've seen that.
I'm blanking on the director's name. I feel terrible, the writer director. But it's this kind of like small slice of life, coming of age indie film that feels very much like It Follows, but without the horror element. Kind of like a Dazed and Confused a little bit, but in the tone of It Follows. And that movie just like it just jazzed me so hard. And then when I was like, oh, that dude's doing a horror movie, I'm like, oh, that's cool. And I thought it was great. I have yet to see Under a Silver Lake, the one he did after, which I've heard mixed things, but people who I trust tell me I'll really love it.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's cool.
That's the one with Andrew Garfield, the third one.
Oh, I don't think I've seen that one either. I remember seeing It Follows because it was sort of like being very hyped at the time.
Yeah.
And being like, okay, I'll check this out. And luckily, I don't think there was a lot of time between the time it was in theaters and the time it was available to like stream
right. or
like see online. And, you know, I have a kid and she was younger then. So, you know, it's right. like, I got to choose my battles as to what like I'm going to actually sure. go to the theater and see. But I remember liking it, but not being and really loving like the filmmaking and stuff and everything,
right.
and the camera work and just, but there was sort of like, it's this sort of thing with like the, I guess it's, I don't want to say the A24 aesthetic or something that's happening in right. horror movies, but this sort right. of like slow burn thing that very much
right.
gets on my nerves because I right. like it for a little while, but if it's like the whole movie, then I start right. to get impatient. And maybe that's right. my, you know, that's maybe my own,
I get that.
You know, my own
I get
thing.
That.
Yeah.
I get
Which
that.
I appreciate I, that I've, your book does I've, not have that.
Thank you. I've turned movies off. If I have, I have two little kids.
Yeah.
I've turned some movies off after about 20 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
I'm sure it's cool. I can't sit through this for 2 hours.
So in the crop of like, I mean, we talked about, you know, some things that you mentioned, like as far as masterpieces, but like, I'm sure you had to do, I mean, earlier I said like how much research right. did you have to do, how much did you, but you probably sure. had to do like an analysis of like how these things sure. are built, right?
Sure.
So like in your, what are some of the things that you learned as far as things that you didn't know before, maybe about filmmaking or screenwriting or sure. just writing or establishing sure. character or scary things
sure.
Sure. in the so, research to make this book?
Sure. So as I mentioned before, I actually teach a genre class in filmmaking.
Yeah.
And a lot of that just, so the research, you know, just like, What I was sort of going for before we got off on the tangent was, I don't think you need to watch every Halloween movie to get what a Halloween movie is.
Sure, sure. And I don't know that I would recommend it either to watch all the Halloween movies.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but the editor of the book was in one of the Halloween films.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, can we say which one?
I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but you know, if people just get on Google, they could probably figure it
sure,
out.
Sure, sure.
Which is cool because, you know, having her support and guidance was, this is Renee, was invaluable.
Uh-huh.
She, you know, really gets and understands the genre, and likewise Jeff, the publisher, they were just great and very supportive the whole way through. But as far as research, you know, it's like a lot of the movies you just think in terms of archetypes. And teaching the genre class, one of the things that I didn't really know was in horror films, what distinguishes it as a genre among many, 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 many things is it's often an unclear protagonist.
Okay.
And that's so, you know, when the movie with a high body count, so you're worried for all the characters. So if you think about like, I mean, the two best examples are Nightmare on Elm Street and Scream. Let's go to Wes Craven.
Sure.
Of Nightmare on Elm Street, I think, what's her name, Christine? Like, it feels like Christine's the main character and then Nancy takes over.
Yeah.
Likewise, I mean, that first Scream movie, like, forget what anybody says, that's Drew Barrymore's movie, and she's dead in 20 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert for a movie that came out, you know, 30 years ago. But sure. But she was all over the marketing for that. And I mean, her scene is just so iconic, even though it was Sidney Prescott who went on to, what are we on, Scream 5 at this point?
I don't even know. I haven't been paying attention.
I checked out after Scream 3.
Yeah. I think for me it was 2 and I was done.
I hear the new one's pretty good.
Yeah.
But yeah, so just thinking about stuff like that. And then also when working in genre, knowing tropes I wanted to keep, like I wanted to keep, you know, the closed contained environment until, you know, the back half of the book when all of a sudden it's not. You know, closed contained environment, you know, the high body count. But also I was like, I want to tell a story about a protagonist. I want to tell an emotional story that you may not get in most horror films. You get in a lot. Like, I mean, Nightmare on Elm Street certainly has this, with the character arc and a journey and, you know, all that kind of nuts and bolts, kind of screenwriterly, comic book writerly nonsense. The other bit of the research actually came from my wife, who's a therapist. So just leaning on her a little bit just to make sure that I was getting the therapy stuff, if not 100% accurate, gotcha. Then at least in the ballpark.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a quick story. Years ago, I sold a TV movie that, God willing, will never get made.
I was going to say congratulations, but oops, okay.
There are some jobs you take for the paycheck and some jobs you take because you love it. This was the paycheck.
So if your name shows up on a TV movie, I know which one you were talking about.
Yeah, they own the script outright. Okay. I wrote it in a weekend at a bachelor party in Vegas. So I can't imagine it's very good.
Wow. This will be one of those Netflix things that you were talking about.
God help us all. You know, my wife is a therapist. She used to be a lawyer, and this actually is a rom-com, and it's a rom-com about two lawyers.
Did you just say that your wife used to be a lawyer and she's a therapist now? That's amazing.
She used to be a lawyer. Now she's a therapist. That's correct.
I want to interview her. That's amazing. That's so great. How long did she have to go to school for all that?
Between the two of us, we've been at school a very long time. We met, this is true. We met, I was 30, she was 28. We met in the freshman dorms at USC. That's
wow. True. All right. Anyway, go on. Tell your wife I'm very interested in that.
Neither here nor there. But so in writing this rom-com, I had to learn about civil procedure.
Okay.
I don't know anything. I'm like the extent of my legal background is I took a comm law class in grad school and I read a bunch of John Grisham novels. So I don't know anything about it. Yeah. So my research was, we talked for about 10 minutes. I got the basic idea. I wrote the script. I had her read it. She's like, this is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. And then I was like, yeah, I don't care. The movie needs it. It's fine. It's fine. I don't care.
Have you seen an episode of Law and Order? Yeah.
Yeah. But one, you know, the therapy stuff in the very final Last Girls, like there's an element of truth to how this stuff works. Uh-huh. Cause it's like, you know, we'll be watching a movie, or I'll give an example, like Ted Lasso, which is a show that I love.
Yeah.
Like the therapist comes in season 2 and my wife's like, wow, no, absolutely not. She has no sense of boundaries, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, I don't want you to say that about my book. So, you know, watching a bunch of movies, really thinking about the genre, the archetypes, the tropes, and then also drawing on just like stuff, you know, just like stuff that I think is cool.
Yeah.
Because ultimately it's like, I want to make the book that I would want to read.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, let me ask you this. I mean, as somebody who wasn't, you know, into this genre, like from the get-go, like who wasn't like, I know everything. What are the things that you learned or like opened your eyes about like the horror genre? Like what are the things that being a screenwriter, being a writer, you know, before this, like what are the things, you know, because obviously it's for years and years, it was a genre that was considered, you know, kind of like lowbrow and not as respectable as, you know, other things.
Right.
And it's people like us who have grown up with it. And it's funny that you mentioned like Freddy Krueger and Jason, like being very prevalent in the 80s, and then comparing it to sort of like Iron Man and stuff, because I did an interview with somebody a couple of weeks ago, and they said, like, you know, if you needed your fantasy, there was no Iron Man, there was no Spider-Man movies, you were going to horror. And I was like, wow, that's an amazing observation. I never really thought about that. But for you, when you were sort of like writing this or trying to construct it, what are, besides the therapy stuff, because I'm sure you learned a thing or two there, what are some of the things that you learned just about horror in general, or just constructing it or making it?
I think it's horror, and horror in comics is tricky.
Oh yeah, because for sure,
so much of what's scary is what you don't see.
Sure.
So I was thinking very specifically about the page turns.
Gotcha.
And being like, all right, because it's like, you know, I can in a horror film, I can do like a flash of a really scary image for just a second to scare somebody.
Yeah.
But in a comic book, like, the reader can look at that for as long as they want, to the point where it's not scary. So like, I think about some of the scariest moments that I've had reading comics. Mm-hmm. And the one in particular, I don't know if you ever read Brian Bendis and Michael Gatos's Alias.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
So what they do to Ant-Man. Do you remember that?
I read it a long time ago. Yeah. You might have to remind me. But this
stuck with me. So this is the Scott Lang, the Paul Rudd Ant-Man. He's dating Jessica Jones. The purple man, David Tennant in the TV show, has gotten out of prison. He's tormenting her.
Oh, okay.
And then it seems like everything's all right. She sleeps, you know, she and Scott are dating. So she wakes up the next morning. She's like, Scott, you turn the page, and his ants have eaten him alive.
That's right. Yeah.
And it was horrifying. Mm. And it was so well done. And just really thinking about, like, okay, so I can't do a jump scare, even though I have moments in here that I would want to be a jump scare, but I can do a cool image on a page turn. And that presents like a really specific challenge, in that I have this whole story I want to tell. Not every shocking moment is going to be on the turn. Now, I'm assuming you read the book digitally, because it's not out in print yet. Yeah. So you didn't get any of that. You're just scrolling. You're like, oh my God, oh my God. But it's a very different experience, you know, flipping through the actual book, trying to really think about those moments that I want to be scary and that I want to be shocking. But also not sacrificing story for, you know, shock and scare.
Yeah.
And then the other piece, I think, was exactly what you said. You know, your fans will probably come at me for this, but I would say probably until Jordan Peele, like, horror was kind of like the schlocky basement genre that nobody cared about. And by being the schlocky basement genre, I got to do a lot of cool stuff because nobody was paying attention.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the fun thing for me as well. In addition to, you know, all of the stuff that, you know, people are like, I don't like horror, but okay, The Shining is good because it's good, or whatever.
Yeah. No, that's as far as like horror comics, how much of a dive did you do into that? Like, because I mean, the thing that, I am one of those people that definitely believes to a certain extent, like you said, like, doing horror in comics is very hard. Like, it's very hard to get me to go like, whoa, and something. And very few American comics have been able to do that for me. For me, like, Japanese comics, like manga, Junji Ito is one of them. Yeah. And then, you know, there's a book called Dragon Head, which I don't even know if it's in print anymore. And there's other stuff where I'm very much, where I've read it and been like, oh, wow, okay, you got it. Like, so as far as like comics, how much of a deep dive did you have to do into that? Or did you read any of the Japanese stuff, or were you curious at all?
You know, I 100% curious, 100% did not read.
Gotcha.
I'd say, you know, the horror books that have stuck with me, I don't even know if you call them horror, just comics that were very unsettling. Neil Gaiman's Sandman, of course.
Okay.
You know, like, overall, it's like, it's a fantasy epic, but there are single issues that were really terrifying that when I read them as a teenager, like all that stuff with like the pedophiles, like went right over my head.
Okay.
Didn't understand it. But then when I went back as an adult, I'm like, this is really, really unsettling. And this is really fucked up.
Yeah.
But also I think it's, what is it? Harlan Ellison, Boy and His Dog from like the 70s or whatever that was. That was, it's a, I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's a science fiction book.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a movie that I've never seen, that I have no desire to see, because that one sounds like it would be terrifying for me still. Uh-huh. I should probably watch it.
Is it? I think the movie, doesn't the movie have like Don Johnson in it or something? Or like, I'm maybe. Not sure. I could be wrong.
I mean, the book's got like, it's like he falls in love with this girl and then cannibalism, he eats her.
Yeesh.
It's
so you
dark.
Didn't read The Road or anything like that? Like, is it Cormac McCarthy?
I saw the film. I saw the film and I was like, I'm good. This is bleak. This is very bleak.
Yeah.
But you know, it's the horror books I've read, other than those which pop into my mind, and I'm sure I've read. I mean, The Walking Dead, of course.
Yeah. I shouldn't give The Walking Dead the short shrift.
But The Walking Dead, I think, for me, it's, yes, there are some truly horrific moments, but it works so well because we care about those characters.
Yeah, absolutely.
And look, that's true with any story. Like The Walking Dead, I thought was real cool. I read one recently and I'm blanking on it. Rockstars, the Image book. I don't know if you've read that.
Oh, I have not read that.
It's basically Almost Famous, which is one of my favorite films, as a horror story.
Oh, nice.
It's cool. It's super cool. Movies I'm so specific about, and comics I'm just like, I read so many. I don't know. They're all great. I'm sure after this chat, well, I'll think of like 12.
Well, so you are a big comic book reader. I mean, you're a screenwriter too and stuff like that. But you love comics as well, right? Like, comics, I can't tell you how many times, I mean, it sounds like a complaint. I say it a lot in these interviews, but I meet so many people who are like, it was a screenplay first and then I discovered comics and I was like, let's make a comic, and more power to you if that's what you want to do, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I grew up, you know, born in the 70s, raised in the 80s, you know, discovered, you know, my pamphlet comics and hardcore comic nerd since.
Sure.
Wait, how did you discover comics?
Sure. So this will very specifically date me. I'll give you my origin story.
Great.
I was 11 years old at Greg Schuster's birthday party.
You remember the name.
I don't even know if I should say, I haven't talked to this guy in years. He was a great friend of mine that, you know, he fell out of touch with.
So much for you, Greg.
And the party favor. Yeah. Hi, Greg, if you're listening,
yeah, I know.
Drop me a line. And the party favor was comic books, because the X-Men animated series had just come out. It was 92.
Gotcha.
And I had read comic books before at summer camp, and I knew they said to be continued, but like, I never actually intellectually understood that there was a store I could go to and find out what happened next.
Oh, gotcha.
Until reading Uncanny X-Men number 298. And that was it.
Which one is that?
That's the one. It's The Acolyte's Return.
Okay. That was like
right. It's right before the big Magneto return for number 300.
Yeah.
Or it was. I think he returned in 304.
I think that would have been John Romita Jr. Right? John Romita.
It was John. Or Fabian. It was either.
No,
John
I'm
Romita
saying
Jr.
drawing it. Right.
I think like, Scott Lobdell was the writer.
Yeah, but I think the illustrator, I think, would have been John Romita. I'll have to check.
On 300, I think it might have been Fabian, and I'm probably butchering his last name.
On 390.
I could be wrong. It could have been John Romita Jr.
I for some reason, I remember it. I remember The Acolytes. I remember that specifically. Okay, I know what you're talking
about.
So
that, it was just, and then from there, and this was about when, like, many of my friends were getting out of comics and discovering like rock and roll and girls. I was getting into comics and rock and roll and trying to figure out how to talk to girls.
Yeah.
Not very successfully, because I was reading a lot of comics.
Join the club.
And then I always had an interest in illustration. Flash forward, I was a senior in high school, and there was no better way in being very popular than having them announce on the morning announcements that my comic book that I made with some friends was on sale in the school store.
Nice.
That is, of course, complete sarcasm, because people are like, why is this guy selling these dumb Xerox comics? As a fun little aside, one of the guys I was making comic books with in high school, he was 2 years younger, best friends with my, who was also doing this, went on to write and create for some very big Cartoon Network shows.
Oh, cool.
Which is kind of awesome. But yeah, so we were making these comics. I did a daily comic strip at the University of Maryland where I did my undergrad, which I like to say.
So you were drawing as well as writing?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Cool.
And I was doing like political cartoons. So my background is actually humor.
Oh, okay.
I went on I went to grad school at the University of Missouri where I met Z. I did the journalism program. And where all my friends were getting like real journalism internships at like, you know, like the St. Louis Post-Dispatch or Time Magazine or wherever, I interned at Mad Magazine, which has no
that's
journalism.
So much cooler.
No journalism credentials whatsoever. Actually, you'll appreciate this. One of the toughest decisions of that year was, do I intern at Mad or do I intern at Wizard?
Oh.
And I loved Wizard.
You went to Mad though, right?
I went to Mad.
That was a better choice.
I had to.
Yeah.
Because I grew up with Mad. I did freelance work for Mad for years. Mad Magazine, rest in peace.
Yeah.
And you know, I was working as a newspaper reporter in and around Washington D.C. Still making comics with my best friends, just doing independent shows, having fun, not really thinking anything of it. And then I kind of realized there was no future writing in community newspapers. Our sales were terrible.
Yeah.
Nobody was reading. I mean, still like nobody really reads print media. I do, but I'm like a weirdo. And so I saw the writing on the wall and I was like, well, what do I want to do? I want to write comics. There's no money in comics. There's no jobs in comics. Well, and you know, the advice I got from my editor, John Barber, who was amazing, was like, don't come to us, have us come to you, you know, make your own stuff. Mm. And that's what we were doing. And I left newspapers. I went back to school to USC for a degree in film production. Only because I was like, well, a lot of my favorite comic book writers are also TV writers.
Yeah.
Maybe I could do that. and that was literally the thought process. So I came out to LA, and 6 months after I came out to LA, and this is actually going to bring it full circle, I was in New York doing a comic book show with my best friend. We were, you know, this indie book that maybe like a few hundred people ever even read, just from going to shows over the years. And unbeknownst to us, Jeff Klein, the publisher of Very Final Less Girls, picked it up.
Nice.
And 2 days later, he emails us. We had no idea who this guy was. He's like, hey, have you guys ever thought about turning this to a TV show? And
wow.
we were like, and I don't know if the podcast is video or audio, but
no,
I'm shaking
just audio.
My head. Your audio, cool. So I'm shaking my head no as I'm saying yes. So it's like, you know, my biggest dream for this book was to, and I was the illustrator, my friend was the writer, was to just do something kind of silly, maybe get better as an artist, maybe find a small publisher, maybe.
So wait, which book was this?
So this was a book called Assholes.
Oh, that's great. Not a great name for a TV show, though.
Yeah, I think it was basically, he wrote it. It was about our adventures in
our
20s.
That's so great. I was not expecting that at all. That's fantastic. This was called Ass.
That's what it was called.
That's awesome. That's so great.
It was a 3-issue miniseries. And again, you know, we sold it at show. We actually did one show in Maryland where we're both from, where his grandma lived at the senior retirement center, like right across the street from the convention was. So she came to the show and she was like, this book is terrible. What's wrong with you? Why would you read this? And it helped us sell a lot of books.
Oh, it was great.
But the next thing we knew, I had been in LA 6 months. we were going around pitching this as a TV show, which now having been in LA for, coming up on 13, 14 years or whatever it's been, but it was very, very exciting at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
We couldn't sell it anywhere. So Jeff felt bad. So he's like, I'm doing the new G.I. Joe animated series for the Hub. How would you boys like to write an episode? And we were like, we'd love to. We don't know anything about G.I. Joe because our parents wouldn't let us watch when we were kids.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, that's fine. So we wrote an episode of G.I. Joe, and that's how I got started. And that's then, awesome. And that was over 10 years ago now. And then last year, when I was figuring out what to do with the book that became The Very Final Last Girls, I sent it to Jeff. And then a couple weeks later, he sent me a publishing contract, which was not expected.
Oh, wow.
And awesome.
Wow. Oh, so you didn't have a publisher lined up before you started creating this. You just
correct.
Were working on it and you finished it and then you got a publisher.
Well, so the reality is we finished the first four, the books that Z was drawing.
Gotcha.
And I knew that unless a publisher stepped in, I didn't want to front the money.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
Finish
yeah.
it with a different artist. And I also knew that with a publisher, she might be able to finish it. That unfortunately she was not able to, but with the publisher, then, we had Andre step in. But again, credit to Michael Woods, because I think it was, I posted on some Facebook group like, hey, here's a book I'm working on. What publishers do you guys think would be worthwhile to reach out to?
Yeah.
And most people, on these, Facebook groups, they're like, are you looking for a letterer? Do you want a cover artist? And I'm like, that's not what I asked. And then Michael was like, hey, I really like the art. Would you mind if I colored a couple pages? And I was like,
nice.
Yeah, sure. And I thought he was, just some guy who was practicing and learning, and I'm cool. That's fine. You want to practice, learn. Here's a couple pages, knock yourself out.
Yeah.
A few days later, he gets back at me and I say to my wife, I'm like, I want to hire this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And she says, how much is that going to cost? And yep. I tell her, and she's like, absolutely not. but then I was like, well, what if we just color the first issue and then use that to
yeah,
go
yeah,
out?
Yeah.
And she was like, fine. We did that. And again, I can't thank Michael enough. I mean, I think he's a great colorist, and without him, the book wouldn't exist. And, other than see his cover for the trade, he colored the whole thing.
That's awesome.
He was great. He was great to work with too. So if you're looking to hire a colorist, hire Michael Woods.
Michael Woods. Well, your name is Josh. Help me with the last name again.
Iserick.
Josh Iserick. This book is not called Assholes. It is called The Very Final Last Girls. I am never going to get over that. I think that is just, that it was, I was not expecting that at all. It's so great.
But, the title?
Yeah, the title.
Well, that was actually Jeff. I'll give Jeff credit for that.
Well,
we went back and forth. And that was Jeff's call. And I think it's a great title.
Well, this is The Very Final Last Girls. I actually really enjoyed this book. You did a great job. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
Any final thoughts before we depart?
Sure.
Because I've had you on for almost an hour. I don't want to keep you longer than you need to be kept.
Sir, I have two little kids. I'm happy to keep talking. final thoughts, just thank you. Thank you. And thank you to all your listeners. Check us out. We will be at some point in July, hopefully before this comes out. So I don't know when this is going to air, but when people are listening to this, darbypop.com,
yep.
darbypop.com will be in the store. You can also find us on Comixology. You can find us on Amazon, although I'm told we'll be more expensive there on Amazon. So
oh,
go to darbypop.com.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, I'll be, or you can call your local comic book store if you want to support them for sure. They'll probably have to special order it. We are a small independent book, but, we are in the Diamond catalog. They should be able to order no problem.
Do you have a Diamond number handy or?
We do. I can find that for you.
I can find that. I can edit that in. Yeah. Well, I mean, what I was going to say while you're looking, Yeah, I mean, I can drop this closer to whenever you find out the publishing date is. So, you know, that doesn't, cool. It doesn't, I can hold on to this, you know, because of the worldwide sort of like shipping crisis or whatever delays, I've had to hold on to interviews a little bit, particularly for people who are actually being, you know, published physically through a company. Right. So that's not a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that. Okay. So the diamond number is APR221391. Again, APR221391.
Cool. And where can people find you online? Like, do you have a website, Twitter, whatever?
I did. And then my friend, my awesome friend, Eric, who was doing it all for me for free for over 10 years, is like, I don't want to do this. And the website was just a bunch of my old comics. And I really want to be focused on Very Final Last Girls. And then I actually have a book. I don't know if I should be talking about it. It's been announced, but because I'm here to promote the Very Final Last Girls, but I will also promote myself. I have another book coming out probably, my guess is either late this year or next year, called Charm City through Scout Comics.
Oh, cool.
Which is very different. It is it has nothing to do with Very Final Last Girls, but it is the angel to the Very Final Last Girls, Buffy.
Nice. I like it.
So it's a bit darker. It's a bit more, it's a bit grittier. It's a bit, but still with supernatural elements.
Cool.
And that's all about my native Maryland and Baltimore with magic, of course.
Nice.
Yes, that'll be coming from Scout. So
no Twitter page for you or no social medias or anything like that?
I do have a Twitter page. I don't understand. I'm old. I don't understand how Twitter works. Like, I go on Twitter and it's like, it's just like, I feel like it's just like epilepsy. Just
I'm terrible
at, me. Like,
at it too.
I don't get it.
I should
I do
be
have
better.
Twitter. I do have Twitter. I don't even know what my Twitter handle is.
Well, I'll link to it on my page if you want.
I do have Twitter, but I do have Instagram. That one I do. I am Josh Draws Comics.
Josh Draws Comics. Cool.
Josh
I'm going to follow
Comics.
You. That's great.
Thank you. And
that's great.
That is my Instagram. But the best way to reach me is honestly my email, which you're welcome to throw in there as well.
Sure.
It's J Iserick. That's the best way to reach me. And I just
Iserick
started
is
like it's J E I S as in Sam E R K E at gmail.com is the best way to reach me.
Cool.
I just started a listserv. If anybody wants to just shoot me an email, and I'm happy to throw anybody on there. I won't spam you. It's just like, hey, I got a book coming out, just for stuff like that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
cool.
So well, anyway, that is, I guess that's all I need to plug.
I think
I'll probably forget something.
Well, if you want to come back on for Charm City, whenever that comes out, I'd love to have you on. It's been a real pleasure talking with you, Josh Iserick. I got the last name right.
Correct.
Josh Iserick.
It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for coming on. And the book is The Very Final Last Girls. By the time this interview drops, it'll hopefully be in stores. It is out by Darby Pop Publishing. Josh Iserick. My name is Christian Horn. This has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. You can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that wonderful social media stuff that Josh and I should be better at. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Go check out The Very Final Last Girls. It's a great book. And thank you for listening. And we will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy.